my partner Mark Pascal. Together we own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, and we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. Listen to us every day from 11 a.m. to noon, and you can reach us through www.restaurantguysradio.com. You can also find us podcasting on iTunes and download some old shows from our site, so we encourage you to go visit. I feel so
au courant.
So very 21st century for two 40-year-old guys.
Either of which owns an iPod.
Yeah, well, but you can go to the site and just download the music. I mean, you know, iTunes you can download. And it's free. Set me free. Today we have, later in the show, a very interesting guest, a gentleman named John Stauber, who's the executive director and founder of the Center for Media and Democracy in Madison, Wisconsin. And he wrote a very wonderful, very prescient book in 1997 called Mad Cow USA, sort of warning us about what was going to happen if we didn't do anything, and that mad cow disease was going to come to the United States. And people called him a quack and a crackpot and really called him a food terrorist, all kinds of crazy things.
It's here.
And then, of course, he's said his most recent version shows how it did indeed come here just exactly as he said it was going to. And he's probably knows more about the subject than anyone, and he's more likely to give you a straight answer than anybody in the government. And it's a very interesting disease from a chemical standpoint, from a how it works. And it's very interesting and disturbing how our government
is
ignoring it, blown it off.
We're lucky. There have been very few cases. That's all good news. But there's no reason to take the kind of risks that we're taking for pennies.
And
I realize that those pennies, when you're talking about millions and millions of pounds of beef, turn into millions and millions of dollars. But there's no reason. There's no reason. You're going to spend how many millions of dollars are you going to spend on the cure for this disease, which there is none for right now?
Well, we're going to talk with John Stauber in a few minutes. He'll be joining us to talk more about his book, Mad Cow USA, which was a phenomenal and prescient book and is still really worth the read. But in the meantime, let's talk about Martha Stewart.
She is from Nutley, you know.
Because she's more fun to talk about.
She's a Nutley.
She is the pride of Nutley.
Well, quit it.
Okay, all right.
Annie Oakley's the pride of Nutley. Thank you very much.
Is Annie Oakley really from Nutley?
Of course, as is Robert Blake. And
who cares? Oh, Robert Blake.
Yeah.
More esteemed people from Nutley.
It's bad.
Fabu, Mark. Fabu.
We're just trying to keep the people from Nutley out of jail. How's that?
Good. Well, Martha's back. She's graduated into house arrest. And Martha Stewart is back in the kitchen. Lunch customers at the Rickshaw Dumpling Bar in Manhattan were astonished yesterday to find their grub served up by everyone's favorite ex-con and domestic diva. Really hard. I never thought we'd be in a world where we could be both an ex-con and a domestic diva. But here we are. The dumplings are here, La Martha caroled as she walked in a white chef's hat and presented the steamed and fried dumplings. The whole escapade was taped for Martha's upcoming syndicated talk show, Heaven Help Us, Martha, which will debut September 12th, presumably when she's done with her house arrest.
Martha, Martha, Martha. Well, they can film it from inside her own kitchen right now.
Meanwhile, if you want to meet Martha, here's your shot. The show is looking for America's worst cooks, whom Martha will whip, saute.
Oh, I want to be on. I want to be known as America's worst cook.
Well,
Pick me.
Well, Martha.
What's wrong with us?
Have you gotten off your meds again, Martha? Martha, will you let me get through the article, please? Martha will, she's looking for America's worst cooks, and she's going to whip, saute, blend, and puree you into shape. So throw your token to the ring, send a 3-minute videotape of you evidently
bumbling in the kitchen.
And being terrible
in
the kitchen.
You need to bumble.
Two,
if you don't bumble, don't send your tape.
Two, Worst Cooks in America contest, Martha, MSLO Productions, P.O. Box 1942, New York, New York, 10116.
That is so on the list of Who Cares.
Oh, my God.
Who Cares TV. I'm going to start a new channel, and I'm going to call it Who Cares TV, and I'm going to put all this banal idiocy on that channel, and you guys, and anybody who wants to watch can watch.
It also reminds me of this jerk Gordon Ramsay who has this this show. He's supposedly he's got this multi-starred Michelin-starred British chef.
He's a three-star Michelin chef.
What's he
denigrating
doing?
Denigrating himself, ruining his reputation every Monday night on TV.
I bet he's getting paid big bucks, though, huh?
Whatever.
Okay. If they paid me enough, I'd ruin my reputation.
This is a guy who I had respect for, but from the restaurants that he's been chef of, who I have lost all respect for.
Well, he's just a jerk, first of all.
He's a jerk.
Being talented is no reason to be
a total jerk, right.
Now, being a chef, a chef needs to be tough. A chef needs to be a disciplinarian. A chef needs to be a coach. But this guy's just a jerk, and his show's stupid. He takes amateur chefs, without teaching him anything, spends a half an hour teaching him, and then throws him in a kitchen and expects him to produce four-star cuisine and screams at him if they don't.
I saw last
week. Why would you think they would?
Last week's show, and I have been watching the show so I could mock it. Okay, so that's the truth. The show angers me every time I watch it, but I do watch it for you so I can mock it on the air for you.
You know
what? Last week's show?
Yeah.
He's like, okay, you're gonna saute and caramelize fruit and serve me this dessert, and whoever has the best dessert gets to the prize for the day.
Yeah, and?
Okay, and I'm gonna say he spent 17 seconds teaching them how to make this dessert and said, ready, set, go. and they're going, and he's like, hey, have you ever done this before? No, chef, never. Never done it, never seen it, don't know how to do it.
And then
he walks up to him and he's like, this is terrible. I can't believe this is horrible.
Right. You know what? I want to give him a wrench and an airplane and say, okay, take it apart and put it back together. Go. You know, and the thing is, what that shows is that you really have no respect for food. I mean, if you have respect for people, it's a craft, okay? And if you have respect for people, you don't abuse people.
And that's what it is, no respect for the people. That's what disturbs me.
And no respect for the food, because obviously you think people should be able to learn it in 17 seconds.
So enough banalities, Francis. Let's talk about something a little bit more serious. Let's bring John Stauber on. I see we have him on the line.
John Stauber has written Mad Cow USA, and he's the executive director and founder of the Center for Media and Democracy in Madison, Wisconsin. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be on.
Thanks for coming back today, John. We had John on just before in our last show, and we talked a little bit about mad cow disease and where it came from and the bad things that it does.
John, in your book, you talk about – your book is not just about – it's a wonderful book that you talk a lot about the processes of how the disease works, how in England they found out about the disease. And sadly, unlike England, we had fair warning of it, and we could have learned from their experience – yet we've done very little. And you said that the U.S. assurances of safety are based on more a public relations campaign and public deception than they are actually any science or any public response. Do you stand by those comments still?
Absolutely, absolutely. Even with mad cow disease here in North America and two mad cows found in the U.S., the public is frankly being lied to, and I understand the significance of using that strong word, but here's an example. At their most recent news conference, Dr. John Clifford of the U.S. Department of Agriculture said, we have in place a ruminant-to-ruminant feed ban in the United States, quote-unquote, and this is what the USDA likes to refer to as the firewall feed ban. The reality is we don't have a ruminant-to-ruminant feed ban.
It's not there.
Can I suggest that we call it the liar-liar pants-on-fire wall feed ban?
Yeah.
So there is no firewall. You know, when I read about this, they often say it's a voluntary ban. You know, in my book, if it's voluntary, it's not a ban.
Well, you know, there was a voluntary ban, quote-unquote, which you're right, is a total oxymoron. Either something is banned or it's not. A voluntary ban, it's like, gee whiz, use it or don't use it, it's up to you. That was the PR stunt that they were employing right up to the summer of 1997. Finally, in 1997, the Food and Drug Administration came out with its first mandatory regulation regarding the feeding of slaughterhouse waste to cattle and other livestock.
We're going to talk more about that in just a moment. We're talking, you're with the restaurant guys, and we're talking with John Stauber, author of Mad Cow USA, about the situation of mad cow disease in America. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to the restaurant guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schott. Today we have with us John Stauber, Executive Director and Founder of the Center for Media and Democracy in Madison, Wisconsin, and also the author of Mad Cow USA, a book that came out in 97 that told us all of these things that were about to happen to us. John, now one of the things that I've seen here is we've tested 388,000 cows and had three positives, and one of those has been verified to have mad cow. What are we doing? I mean, it seems like our beef is pretty safe. Is that true?
Well, if you're saying is our North American meat supply safe when it comes to mad cow disease, no, it's not safe because what we would need to do to have a safe beef supply in the United States and Canada is this ban on feeding animal protein, which, as I've said, has never been put in place, what they call the firewall feed ban, which was formulated back in 1997, has incredible gaping loopholes. They're still allowing legally the feeding of cattle blood and fat to cattle. We're weaning calves on cattle blood. And cattle fat, meat, and bone meal are fed to pigs and chickens, which are fed to themselves and then fed back to cattle. And a million tons a year of poultry litter, the feces and crap and crud swept up out of
literally
of poultry barns, a million tons of that a year is fed to cattle in the U.S. And the head of the Food and Drug Administration, Lester Crawford, has said that up to 30% of that million tons of so-called poultry litter can be spilled and defecated meat and bone meal. So here we are feeding hundreds of millions of pounds of...
Right, we feed cattle to the chickens, and then we feed the chicken litter
right,
to the cattle.
Million tons a year, 30% of it can be spilled and defecated cattle meat and bone meal. So this is our quote-unquote firewall feed ban. Now, all of these practices, which are widespread in the U.S. and legal, are banned in countries where they have a real firewall feed ban. And these are all routes whereby mammalian and ruminant protein get back to cattle. So when the cattle industry and the USDA says, we have a firewall feed ban, we have a ban on feeding ruminant protein to ruminants, they are not just being deceptive. They are, in fact, actually lying.
You actually said when talking about some other diseases, but I think it applies as well in your book, you said the government programs have tended to eradicate reporting of the disease rather than eradicating the disease. And that's more the, it seems to be more the aim of the programs. How do you get, I'm sorry, how do you get that 688,000, how are they choosing what cows to test when they do test?
The 388,000,
right. 388,000. How do they choose those cows?
Yeah, well, as far as the cattle testing program in the U.S. goes, first of all, remember there are about 35 or 36 million cattle slaughtered and put into the human and animal food chain every year in the U.S. There were very few cattle tested until that first mad cow showed up in December of 2003.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, they've stepped up their testing. They're testing about 7,000 animals a week. They're up to close to 400,000 animals tested. And as you say, they've picked up this mad cow in Texas. But if you ask the U.S. Department of Agriculture, please supply the statistical data upon which your mad cow testing program is based, they won't do it. What they're doing is they're testing downer cows, cows
right,
that are disabled. And it's a voluntary testing program, so they're asking industry to help contribute animals.
Unbelievable.
And then they're using these rapid tests, which are usually quite effective. And, in fact, the rapid tests picked up this Texas mad cow in last November, which the USDA's additional testing supposedly found not to be a mad cow.
Negative.
And as we all know, indeed, it has now been proven to be a mad cow. So the testing program is, as the USDA says, not designed to be a food testing program. They've gone on record as saying it's really a program to show that we don't have mad cow disease in the U.S. And I think this is why they don't allow private testing. And what we need is a testing program that is a food safety testing that will test cattle before it goes into the
human food supply. Of course, before we do anything.
And that's what they have in countries like Britain, the rest of the EU countries, and Japan. And as I said, you know, that would cost somewhere between 3 to 6 cents per pound.
Right. We just need to change that. Now, here's what I don't get. Even if we assume that all of the things they've told us are true, that they've created a firewall, that we can no longer be exposed to E. coli, that our cattle are safe. I'm sorry, E. coli. Mad cow. That our cows are safe. Wouldn't we still have to test every single cow that was born before 1997? Even if we assume that all the stuff that they're telling us is true, which we know it isn't, we would have to test all those cows that were exposed and actually ate cow product by their definition of what cow product is, not by ours.
Yeah.
Shouldn't we be testing every cow that's 8 years old or older?
Well, absolutely. But, of course, what happened is that in 1997, when the so-called firewall feed ban, that's just a farce, was announced, they said, but, of course, we don't have mad cow disease in the U.S., and so they tested hardly any animals.
Mm-hmm.
we now know, even through this incredibly inadequate, incompetent, and I would say corrupt testing program we have had, that we've had mad cow disease amplifying and spreading in North America for a decade.
We're going to talk. I know why you say corrupt.
We're going to talk. We're going to talk more about that. We'll be back in just a moment. Central Jersey, 14:50. Time is 11:25. Back with the Restaurant Guys. We're talking with John Stauber, who's the author of Mad Cow USA and the executive director and founder for the Center for Media and Democracy in Madison, Wisconsin. And we were talking about the way that the United States tests for mad cow disease. And to me, it looks like the way that they test is they look for the cows that are least likely to have mad cow disease, and then they test them.
Right.
And one of the things you talked about, and correct me if my understanding of this is wrong, I didn't get this from your book, but I got it from Eric Schlosser's book and some other things that I've read. The testing they do is voluntary, and what they do is they test downer cattle. They test cattle that's so sick it can't walk, except that when a mad cow starts to show signs of the BSE, the disease that we call mad cow disease, it doesn't fall down right away. It starts to act confused. Mm-hmm. It may start to shake, and it may start to shudder. And so if you're a rancher and you don't want your mad cow disease tested, what you do is as soon as you get a cow that starts to show mad cow disease, you bury that one cow in the backyard, even though that indicates that there's probably a problem in the rest of the herd, or you hurry that cow up so it doesn't fall down before it gets to the feedlot. Is my understanding of that right?
Well, it's relatively easy to hide a suspect mad cow just the way you described. And it's interesting that just this summer some statistics came out which indicated that all of a sudden there seemed to be fewer downer cows on farms in the U.S. than there used to be.
Where did they go?
Where did they go? And farmers will say, well, we're tending to bury them on the back 40. We're composting them on the farm. And
sounds like a good idea.
And, you know, they'll say, well, you see, because now it costs us more money to get rid of these. But this is what happened in Europe when Europe was in denial about
cow disease.
Cows are being buried on the back 40. People didn't want to come forward and say, gee, I think I have a suspect animal here. So the thing to remember also is that with mad cow disease, with human mad cow disease, this is an invisible disease that incubates slowly, and infected people and animals look healthy. So during most of its lifetime, a cow is going to look healthy and end up being slaughtered.
Right. A downer cow, this is going to take 20 years, perhaps, to show itself, or 10 years, or 5 years even in a cow.
Five to 8 years in a cow.
So it's a downer cow for the last 3 or 4 days of its life. It may have the disease for 5 or 10 years or 15 years.
Right, and as soon as it starts to show symptoms, you hurry it up to the slaughterhouse and get it killed, and you get it off your hands. And let's just also remember that researchers have taken infected hamster brains, buried them in the soil, dug them up 3 years later, and it stays infective in the soil. So this is a very dangerous thing where we're sticking our head in the sand. We're talking with John Stauber, who's the author of the book Mad Cow USA. And after the news, we're going to be talking more about that, and not just about the disease itself, but the implications that we have for free speech in the United States and some very disturbing things that are going on with our government. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 14:50. The time is 11:30. And welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott. I'm here with Mark Pascal, my partner, and together we own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. Listen to us every day from 11 a.m. to 12 noon, and reach us through www.restaurantguysradio.com. And one of the finest things in life is a nice big hunk of juicy steak. And one of the things we're talking about today is a rather disturbing topic. Our guest is John Stauber, who's the author of a book called Mad Cow USA. He's also the executive director and founder of the Center for Media and Democracy in Madison, Wisconsin. And we're talking with him about mad cow disease in the United States.
And just remember, the reason we're bringing this up is because we love steak and we love to eat beef and we want to be able to continue to eat beef and we want to be able to continue to eat beef safely.
And one of the things that you talk about in your book, because your book is it talks about the disease, it talks about the spread of the disease, it talks about how it was discovered and the chemistry of it. It's really a fascinating book. I wish it were about a historical problem that we have solved, but it's not. It's about a current problem, and so it's all the more important to read it, if a little more scary. But one of the things you talk about is how despicably our government has reacted to this and how poorly it's been handled by the Department of Agriculture and the administrations under which this has arisen, and both Democrat and Republican. And one of the things that have been passed is the meat industry is so powerful. One of the issues you deal with is...
It's all that muscle.
Is as you say your book is not only about biology and the food.
Didn't you get that? All that muscle.
You say your book is not only about biology and safety, but about our fundamental rights to discuss and debate concerns about the food we eat and choose in the marketplace as informed and educated consumers. There are free speech implications to what's going on. Will you tell us what food disparagement laws are? Because I don't think people know what food disparagement laws are.
Well, a lot of people will remember that some years ago, it was actually in the spring of 1996, right after Britain announced that mad cow disease was killing young people with this horrific dementia in England, Oprah Winfrey had a program on mad cow disease. It was a very balanced program. She had Gary Weber, a lobbyist for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, Dr. Will Houston from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and Howard Lyman, a multi-generation rancher from Montana, turned vegetarian activist. And on Oprah's huge show, Howard Lyman, for the first time, told this nationwide audience and Oprah's studio audience and Oprah that we were feeding cattle to cattle in the U.S., and unless we stopped, we were going to end up with mad cow disease like Britain. And Oprah gasped, and her audience gasped, and they said, why are we even feeding cattle to cattle? They're vegetarians. And it had a huge impact. And a month later, Oprah and her guest Howard Lyman were sued by some well-to-do cattle feedlot owners in the state of Texas under the so-called Texas Food Disparagement Act.
Absolutely beautiful.
Now, this is a law lobbied into place by the American Farm Bureau Federation and the American Feed Industry Association years earlier, just for this purpose. It's a law similar to food disparagement acts that they put in place in a dozen other states. And it's very likely unconstitutional because we have a strong First Amendment in the United States to protect free speech so we can discuss these issues.
Well, thank God they sued Oprah because at least she can defend herself.
Yeah, but hold on a second. What the Food Disparagement Act is, it says if I am saying that that mad cow disease might be dangerous, I can be sued because I'm not allowed to say that according to this law?
Essentially, that's correct, because the law says the onus is on you to prove the truth of what you say. So you can be sued. You've got to go hire attorneys. You've got to go hire scientific experts. You've got to go hire medical doctors. You bear all the expense of proving that what you said is truth, whereas under the First Amendment, we usually assume that what you're saying is truthful, and if I've been slandered, I can sue you, but I've got to prove you false.
Right.
That might sound like a legal nuance, and it is, but it's very important to protecting our free speech rights, and these laws turn the First Amendment on its head. And so the first time these laws were ever used was when the cattle feedlot owners sued Oprah, and there's so much irony here because the current governor of the state of Texas is a gentleman by the name of Rick Perry. He was the Texas Agriculture Commissioner at the time of the Oprah show. When Britain announced March of 1996, young people are dying of mad cow disease, Rick Perry held a publicity stunt feeding reporters grilled brisket and ridiculing the threats of mad cow disease. When Oprah held her show April 16, 1996, Rick Perry said to the Texas Attorney General, sue her for food disparagement. The Texas Attorney General said, gee, Rick, it doesn't work that way. Some producers have to. These producers came forward, sued Oprah, and that really shut up the mainstream media and put,
terrible,
I think, a great chill into the mainstream media coverage of this issue. Well, what do we know today? Irony of ironies, Rick Perry is now the governor of Texas, and in June he had to hold a news conference to talk about how the first mad cow found,
right,
born and raised in the U.S. was a Texas cow.
It was in his state.
And the USDA is now saying that mad cow was probably amplifying and spreading in Texas when Oprah was sued.
So Oprah went on the air and said what turned out to be true.
Yes.
And she, not only did she get sued, and now Oprah has the money, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And Oprah was able to stand up to them. But I'll tell you some of the things.
I hope she sues them back.
No, but she can't. She can't. You can't sue them back unless they find that the food disparagement law is unconstitutional, which they haven't done yet.
And the only way they could have found that, excuse me, was if she'd been convicted, then she could have appealed and said, hey, this law is unconstitutional. But unfortunately, these laws still sit on the books.
Mm-hmm. And they sit on the books. And what happens with this kind of thing is you have what you said before, a chilling effect. That other news organizations shied away from it because they said, you know what, we don't have, you know,
right,
we don't
I can't
have,
step into, restaurant guys, for instance, can't step into a lawsuit like
we're,
that.
We're kind of risking it, aren't we? We're really throw caution to the wind. We don't have any assets.
No assets, exactly. No problem.
But, you know, the other thing is that she did present, she was cowed a little bit. Even Oprah was cowed because the cattleman pulled $600,000 in ads, anything beef related, and caused other ads to be pulled as well. And so she sort of had another show where she sort of gave the cattleman side of things unopposed, an unbalanced show,
right?
And that wasn't enough of them. They still sued her. Listen, you had mentioned before on the break, and I hope that you can talk about where this hits maybe a little bit closer to home. We broadcast out of Central Jersey in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and there's been a little bit of issue with human CJD, which is the human form of mad cow disease, right around here. What's going on in New Jersey?
Well, there's a racetrack that's no longer operating in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, and there's a really brave, independent investigator, a housewife by the name of Janet Scarbeck, who noticed a couple years ago this phenomena where a 28-year-old friend of hers who had eaten at the racetrack restaurant, a racetrack where her mom had worked and where this woman worked, died of Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, sporadic CJD, sort of the human form of mad cow disease, mm-hmm. but a form of it not absolutely linked to mad cow disease.
Right, that's what I was going to say. Are there other ways to get that?
Well, they call it sporadic because they don't know why
mm-hmm.
It occurs. But I'll tell you, for it to occur in a 28-year-old is really alarming because this is how they noticed that mad cow disease was moving into people in Britain. Suddenly, people in their teens and 20s began dying of a disease that was very rare and almost only seen in people in their late 60s. So here's a 28-year-old woman in New Jersey dies. Well, you know, it happened. Mm-hmm. Well, what Janet noticed then was other people who ate at the racetrack restaurant also died of confirmed CJD, sporadic
wow.
CJD.
She now, this is the same racetrack.
Same restaurant in mm-hmm. a fairly short period of time. She's now documented well over a dozen CJD deaths. And a year ago, in the summer of 2004, the New Jersey Health Department and the Centers for Disease Control held a news conference and said, oh, don't worry, these deaths are normal, we've mm-hmm. investigated. But there hasn't been any extensive investigation on their part, and Janet's continuing to document more CJD deaths. And one of the problems here in the U.S. is that CJD, whether it's sporadic CJD or whether it's familial CJD or whether it might be variant CJD, is not being reported in every state. And here's another thing we have to do now that we know we have mad cow disease. We have to follow the British example, again, learn from the mistakes they made and the solutions that they've found, and very carefully log and investigate every suspect case of CJD, because if we're moving mad cow disease into the human population here, we've got to know how many people have this disease.
Where it's coming
from.
We're going to talk more with John Stauber, author of Mad Cow USA, in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450, and the time is 11:45. Back with The Restaurant Guys, and our guest today is John Stauber, who's author of Mad Cow USA and the executive director and founder of the Center for Media and Democracy in Madison, Wisconsin. Now, John, if people want to get in touch with you, do you have a website where they can reach you?
They can go to www.prwatch.org. Our Center for Media and Democracy specializes in investigative reporting on corporate and government spin and PR and propaganda. And as your listeners can tell, in some ways, this is a case study of how propaganda works. Rather than fixing the problem, they've been propagandizing the public and using PR.
We're going to put that link to that right on our website.
Yeah, absolutely. Just it's appalling how much money's been spent on the propaganda and how little money's been spent on fixing the problem.
You know, Mark, you've made a point in the past. I don't understand why people are so – why the media industry is fighting this so much. Why don't they just do it, pass the cost on to us? It can be done for less than 10 cents a pound on beef. So the price of beef goes up 10 cents a pound.
Right.
I mean, the consumer's going to pay it anyway.
Yeah,
why not just keep
it.
My kids safe?
We're going to pay it. Just like we pay 10 cents more for gas, we're going to pay 10 cents more for beef. And I don't understand why the beef industry is fighting this. If everybody has to do it, it's a level playing field. And just let us pay the extra 10 cents.
Why do you think there's such resistance here, John?
Well, I think if you look at the meat industry, you look at big companies like Tyson, Cargill, Swift, that dominate the industry, and the big powerful lobbies that really hold sway at the U.S. Department of Agriculture, they're not going to give an inch. And they're powerful, they're arrogant, and they can get away with it, and they are getting away with it. And
until there's 20 cases of mad cow in the United States and people stop eating beef and start eating other products instead.
Well, basically, that's it, because, you know, if the public were understanding what we're discussing on the show, if millions of Americans were tuning in right now, you'd see a drop in beef consumption, mm-hmm. and that might catch their attention. But beef consumption continues to stay high. So they've played this game of, well, we'll just not fix the problem, we'll dumb down the public, and we'll put political pressure on the Japanese and force them to eventually open their markets. And it's arrogant, it's short-sighted, it's dangerous, it threatens human health, and it threatens our human blood supply.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it amuses me that we won't accept Japanese beef in this country.
Yeah,
we can no longer get Kobe beef. And if you see Kobe beef on a menu, what you're seeing is a breed of cow called Wagyu that was brought over from Japan. But we don't actually import Japanese beef anymore. We banned it because they
had mad cow, but then they dealt with it.
Yeah, but
we have mad cow. We didn't deal with it.
Better testing than we do. Is that why we won't bring it in?
Right.
I don't get it.
And so what consumers can do is, I mean, John, if we buy organic beef, that's at least as good a measure as we can do in the United States. Try and keep safe. Is that?
I think that's the best thing for beef eaters to do is search out certified organic, because under the certified organic regulations, absolutely no feeding of so-called animal byproducts, slaughterhouse waste, is allowed. Now, as I explained earlier, it would be great if independent producers and meat plants in the U.S. could test their animals for mad cow disease, but the government is refusing to allow that. So the real dependable choice would be certified organic beef.
And I honestly think, though, that this case of mad cow, people are paying enough attention now that we can put enough pressure there to make them start
and
testing every cow.
We're going to put up on our website a sample form letter that you can send to your member of Congress and your senator and your state legislators and anybody who will listen, and your mayor and your governor and your city council member and your county freeholder, to say, let individual producers test. Okay, you believe in the free market? I believe in the free market, and we'll put the tested beef out there, and we'll put the untested beef out there. And you know what I'm buying? I'm buying the tested beef. But you're telling me you're interfering with the free market to protect the big guys, to not let even a little guy satisfy a free market demand. Let them test the beef so I can feel more secure about the kind of beef that we buy for our customers and for ourselves.
Nope. That's absolutely an important solution.
Now, you said that there's a concern that once Crutchfield-Jacob, once that this disease crosses over into a human that's eaten this product, that human person then can transfer into the blood supply of this infectious CJD. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And if you were to go down to your Red Cross today and say, I'm a good citizen, I want to donate blood, they'd ask you a number of screening questions. One question would be, do you have CJD in your family? Have you been in Britain at the height of the mad cow epidemic? And if you would answer yes to either of those, they would say, listen, we need your blood. We'd love to take it, but we can't allow it because you might be incubating this disease. We have no way to test you for it.
Right.
And this disease might spread to the blood supply.
You know what I really hope? I hope that one day there's no question on there that says, have you ever eaten beef?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I really hope.
Well, here's what's so frightening is that this was, you know, a precaution that they were taking. But a year and a half ago, the British government announced that they had their first, and now they've announced they think they have their second case of human mad cow disease. Two people who've died of human mad cow disease, who they believe got it through the blood supply in Britain. And even though Britain stopped using its own human blood supply at incredible cost back in the late 90s, they apparently didn't stop it soon enough. So not only are we talking about animal health here in the U.S., food safety, but we're talking about protecting access to our own human blood supply in the United States. And the head of the Food and Drug Administration, Lester Crawford, went before a congressional committee.
Actually, we need to take a short break. We'll be right back. We're talking with John Stauber, author of Mad Cow USA, and we'll finish that thought in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55.
Hello, welcome back to The Restaurant Guys. Mark Pascal and Francis Schott. Today we're talking with John Stauber, author of Mad Cow USA. And we were just talking a little bit about how we can protect the blood supply, John. What can we do?
Well, I was saying that the real risk is there that mad cow disease in the U.S. could infect the human blood supply. We'd lose access to our own blood. And in early 2004, the current head of the Food and Drug Administration, Lester Crawford, went before a congressional committee and said to this congressional committee that he thought we needed to ban the practice of feeding cattle blood to cattle in the U.S. because now we were seeing humans dying of blood transfusions. The blood had been contaminated with mad cow disease. That was over a year ago, and nothing has been done in the United States yet to stop the feeding of cattle blood to cattle. So this is...
So even if you're a vegetarian, you're not safe.
Even
if we don't solve the problem.
Even if you were born a vegan and you've lived your whole life as a vegetarian, think of it. There's access to the human blood supply, and there's about 600 drugs that are made from animals called biologics.
Okay.
There's also the risk of mad cow disease spreading into those biologics. So this is a huge problem. And why are we taking these risks? Because the government is deceiving us and because they would rather allow the biggest players in the meat industry to keep feeding their slaughterhouse waste back to livestock as cheap feed.
This is incredible.
John, thank you very much for being with us today. I feel like we just played a bad horror movie for all
except
of our guests, except it's real. You've really been terrific. We really appreciate you spending so much time with us the last couple of days.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Now, we're going to put up on our website how you can get in touch with John Stauber, and his book is Mad Cow USA, written predicting that mad cow disease would come to the United States.
It was written in 97.
And it's been updated since because, of course, mad cow disease has come to the United States, and we're doing precious little about it, and it's very important. Even if you're a vegetarian, it's very, very important, and we need our government to stand up and do something about it.
Because I want a big fat steak.
And I want to continue to eat big fat steak, and I'm going to because it's one of the finer things in life. Sorry for the downer, everybody, but we have important stuff to tell you every once in a while. We'll bring you the good and the bad. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450, and the time is 12 noon.